Hui stood on the hilltop in the dawn and waited for his god. Below him, the camp stirred. The cooking fires paled in the growing light of day. Small sounds carried up to him. The sounds of 6,000 men preparing for the hunt. The 6,000 warriors of Hui's legion, and the king's train, and the slaves, and the women, and the elephants, and the baggage train. Small wonder that the camp filled the entire valley on both sides of the small river that flowed down the escarpment of the hills. 30 miles away to the north lay the sluggish green ribbon of the great river, sweltering in its hot and unhospitable valley. One of Lannan's legions was camped there already, and for days now they'd been harassing the elephant herds that were feeding along the river. They'd attacked them with archers, javelin throwers, and war elephants. Under this harassment, the herds would leave the valley, taking to their ancient roads out over the escarpment. Lannan was encamped now astride these well-blazed trails, and scouts from the valley had reported the previous evening that the herds were already on the move. They were massing and moving in towards the escarpment wall, and in the next few days they would come pouring up out of the valley in long, majestic files, as the old bulls led them to sanctuary from the persistent hunters who plagued them. Hui Ben Ammon pondered this as he stood in the dawn. He wore light hunting armor and running sandals, and he leaned comfortably on the shaft of the vulture axe. The splendid blade was covered with a soft leather sheath to protect the finely honed edge and the delicate engravings. It seemed to Hui that the gods had so arranged circumstances as to provide him with this opportunity. For 2 weeks, ever since the last night of the Festival of the Fruitful Earth, Hui had spent most of his waking moments pondering his dilemma. He had spent hours poring over the sacred books, examining the roles of priest and priestess, their duties in relationship to the gods and to each other. He thought that from all this research, he had built up a case for his behavior. He could not bring himself to call it sacrilege. He had now come to plead his case and to receive judgment. The sun shot its first golden lance against the crest of the hill, and Hui sang the praise chant with all the beauty at his command. And then he made his plea. It was complicated dialectic, based on the concept of earthly representation and amounting to a line of reasoning which supposed that what was good behavior between Baal and his mate Astarte would be equally justifiable between their earthly representatives, although, of course, not between a priestess and any other person than the high priest of Baal. Hui glossed over the more evidently weak spots in his case. He ended, "It may be, however, great Baal and heavenly Astarte, that I am mistaken in my reasoning. It may well be that I have sinned. If this is the case, then I deserve your full wrath, and despite my life of service and faithful duty, I deserve the most dire punishment." Hui paused for effect. "I go now to hunt the elephant. I swear on my life that wherever the chase is hottest, there shall I be. Wherever the danger is deadliest, there I shall be. If I have sinned, then let the tusked beasts strike me down. If I have not sinned, then let me live and return to the bosom of your priestess. If you grant me life and love, I swear my duty and service will last to the end of my days, and no man nor woman will ever know of the dispensation you've granted me." He was quiet a while longer, and then he spoke again. "You who have loved, take pity on one who loves also." Hui came down the hill well satisfied with his bargain. He would give the gods full measure. He would not hang back in distaste from the slaughter today. The gods would have every opportunity to demonstrate their outrage. In any event, Hui was well aware that only death could keep him out of Tanith's arms. The taste of that fruit had been too sweet for him ever to deny it. "Hui!" Lannan shouted as Hui entered the camp. "Where have you been?" He was armed and striding impatiently back and forth outside his tent. He came towards Hui quickly. "The day wastes away," he cried. "Already from the hills our lookouts have seen the approach of the herds." The war elephants were ready, drivers sitting on their necks, and the tall castles on their backs. Lannan's hunting party was assembled about the tent. Among them, Hui noted some of the king's most renowned hunt masters. Mursil, with his purple boozy face, the lean and saturnine Zadal, Huya, the celebrated bowman, and the diminutive yellow Hai, whose fame as a tracker had grown apace in the last few years. Beyond them, amongst the horde of body slaves, towered the colossal black bulk of Timon. Hui smiled at him, and then he hurried beside Lannan to the elephant lines. Lannan told him, "You will ride with me, Sunbird." And Hui replied, "I am honored, my lord." Mursil handed Hui one of the elephant bows. Few men could draw these massive weapons. Carved from solid balks of wild ebony, they were as thick at the center as a man's wrist, and strung with twisted strands of lion gut. It required immense strength in the arms and chest to draw one of the 5-foot arrows that were armed with a heavy steel head and flighted with wild duck feathers. However, once drawn to the limit and loosed, they could fly 100 paces and bury the arrow up to its feathers in the living flesh of an elephant. They could reach the mighty heart in its castle of ribs. They could cut deep into the massive pink lungs, or loosed with skill, they could cut through the ear hole in the great bony skull and find the brain. "I know you prefer the bow to the spear, Holy Father," Mursil murmured respectfully. "And as for me, my old arm can no longer draw." "Thank you, Huntmaster. The quivers are full. I've tested and selected each of the arrows," Mursil assured him. And Hui followed Lannan to where his war elephant knelt. It was a rangy old cow, more steady than the bull in the heat of battle, more reliable and even tempered than the bull in the hunt. Hui followed Lannan up into the castle. There was room in the wooden box for 3 men. The arrow quivers were fitted to the outside, but with the arrowhead standing up ready to the hand. The javelins were racked on the front of the castle, and Lannan selected one and tested it thoughtfully. "A nice balance," he judged it, and then looked down to where his hunt masters waited anxiously, each of them eager for the honor of riding with the Grey Lion. Lannan glanced over them, but his eyes stopped on Hai. He nodded, and with pathetic gratitude the pygmy scrambled up the elephant's side. With a heavy lurch that threw Hui against the edge of the castle, the elephant came up on its feet. They looked down from the majestic height of nearly 18 feet, and the driver goaded the old cow into a stately, swaying walk. They took the trail down towards the escarpment of the valley. "I have selected a good place for it," Lannan told Hui, "where the steep path comes out suddenly into a small flat bowl. We will wait for them there." Hui looked back and saw the other war elephants following them, 20 of them in single file. Ears flapping, trunk swinging, they trundled sedately along. The huntsmen in the castles were checking and testing their weapons and chattering excitedly. "For what do we hunt, my lord?" Hui asked. "Calves or ivory?" "Calves first. The elephant trainers have asked for 2 dozen youngsters between 5 and 10 years old. We'll capture those this morning, for it will be the breeding herds that come up out of the valley first. And then later we will hunt for ivory. The scouts report many fine bulls scattered along the great river." The saucer which Lannan had selected was hemmed in with steep broken ground. It was circular in shape, perhaps 500 paces across. The elephant road came into it through a narrow, rocky pass, crossed the saucer, and climbed out of it up a steep pitch to the high ground above. the saucer was thickly wooded, and Lannan placed his war elephants in ambush, concealing them about the perimeter of the bowl in the good cover. The war elephants were forced to kneel for better concealment, and while they waited, Hui and Lannan breakfasted on cold corn cakes, cheese, and roast salt beef washed down with red wine. It was a hunter's meal, taken in cover with the mounting excitement of the chase sharpening their appetites. And as they ate, they kept glancing up at the lookouts on the high ground above the saucer, whose task it was to watch for and to signal the approach of the herds. The dew was still on the grass when a figure waved frantically from the skyline above them, and Lannan grunted with satisfaction and wiped the grease from his fingers and lips. "Come, my sunbird," he said, and they mounted the kneeling elephant once more. It was a long wait that stretched and tightened their nerves, and then suddenly little Hai stirred expectantly beside Hui, and his dark amber eyes snapped. "They are here," he whispered. And almost immediately, a single wild elephant came out through the rocky portals of the pass and paused on the lip of the saucer. It was an old cow, grey, lean, and tuskless. Suspiciously she looked about the saucer, lifting her trunk to sample the air, and then blowing the sample into her mouth against the olfactory glands in her upper lip. The breeze was behind her, a soft, dry movement of air that carried the smell of waiting men away from her, and she lowered her trunk and moved forward. From the pass behind her poured an avalanche of great grey bodies. "Breeding herd," murmured Lannan, and Hui saw the calves at heel. They ranged in size from almost full-grown to not much bigger than a large pig. The smaller they were, the more noisy and mischievous, squealing, frolicking, and chasing between the legs of their mothers. Hui smiled at the attempts of one to suckle from his mooming mother, groping for the teats between her front legs with his miniature trunk, until, in exasperation, the mother picked up a fallen branch and swatted him mercilessly across the rump. The calf squealed and fell in at her heels again, demure and chastened. The saucer now was full of wild elephants, their grey humped backs showing above the thick bush as they streamed along the ancient road to safety. Lannan leaned forward and touched the driver on the shoulder, and the war elephant rose beneath them, lifting them high so that they could look down from their castle upon the quarry. All around the saucer, the war elephants rose from cover with the armed men upon their backs. They closed in on the herd quietly, the squealing and uproar from the calves blanketing their approach until they were right in amongst the herd. Lannan selected a young cow with a half-grown calf, and leaning out from the castle, he hurled his javelin into her neck, aiming for the great arteries there. The cow squealed in pain and alarm, and bright red arterial blood blew in a cloud from the tip of her trunk. She reeled backwards, mortally wounded, and from the other castles a torrent of missiles flew into the herd. Hundreds of huge bodies burst into flight, and the forest shook and rang with their trumpeting and their frantic efforts at escape. Despite his promise to the gods, Hui did not raise his bow, but watched in awful fascination the slaughter of the terrified beasts. He saw an old cow, bristling with arrows and javelins, charge one of the war elephants and knock it down on its knees. The men were hurled from the castle to fall beneath stampeding hooves, and the old cow tottered away to fall and die, still in her battle rage. He saw a calf hit in error, trying to tear the arrow from its own flesh, and squealing pitifully as the barbs clung stubbornly in the flesh. He saw another calf attempting vainly to rouse its dead mother, tugging at her with its little trunk. Lannan was shouting with excitement, hurling his javelins into the neck and spine with that deadly accuracy that dropped the great grey bodies in profusion about them. One of the herd mothers charged them from the side, a bad-tempered old queen as big and as strong as their mount. She bore down on them. Lannan swung to face her, braced himself, and threw. But the old queen lifted her trunk, and the javelin struck it squarely, biting deep into that pulpy, sensitive member just below the level of her eyes. She squealed in agony, but never faltered in her run, and regretfully, Hui lifted his bow. He knew she would charge home, and that only death would stop her. The old queen lifted her head and trunk high, bracing herself for the impact of her charge. Her mouth was wide open, with the pointed lower lip dangling, and Hui drew and loosed his shaft into the back of her throat. All 5 feet of the arrow disappeared into her gaping mouth, and he knew the point had found the brain, for she reeled back onto her haunches, shuddering and quivering, a strangled, gurgling cry bubbling from her throat. The lids of her eyes twitched violently, and she fell forward and was still. They killed 41 cows, 30 of them with calf. However, 9 of the calves were adjudged by the trainers too young for survival as orphans, and they were put down with a single merciful arrow. The others were cut out and rounded up by specially trained nursing cows and led away from the mountainous, bleeding carcasses of their mothers. By noon, the work was done, and the slaves could busy themselves in butchering the carcasses and carrying the meat away to the smoking racks. The saucer was a reeking charnel house, and the vultures turned overhead in a dark cloud that almost obscured the sun. Lannan ate the midday meal with his nobles and huntmasters, fresh grilled elephant tripe seasoned with hot pepper sauce, broiled elephant heart stuffed with wild rice and olives, platters of golden corn cakes, and the inevitable earthen amphorae of Zeng wine made it a meal fit for a hunter's appetite. Lannan was in high good humor, striding amongst his men, laughing and jesting with them, picking out one or another for a special commendation. He was still wrought up by the excitement of the chase, and when he paused beside Hui, he meant to chaff him when he said, "My poor sunbird, you loosed but one arrow during the whole hunt." And Hui was about to answer lightly that one arrow for one elephant was as good a score as any, when suddenly Zadal, the huntmaster from the Middle Kingdom, laughed. "Was the bow too strong for you, Holiness, or the game too fierce?" There was sudden and deathly silence on the entire group, and all their faces turned towards the lean, dark man with the thin, sneering mouth and bright, acquisitive eyes. It took a few seconds of the silence for Zadal to realize what it said, and then he glanced quickly about the circle of watching faces. With a small chill, he saw that they were looking at him with that same detached, curious expression that men looked upon those doomed to sacrifice. Beside him, a noble said, softly but matter-of-factly, "You're a dead man." Swiftly, with real alarm, Zadal looked back at Hui Ben Ammon. Too late, he recalled the reputation of this priest. It was said that no man still lived who had sneered at his back, or his height, or his courage. With relief, he saw that the priest was smiling slightly and delicately wiping his fingers on the hem of his tunic. "Thank you, great Baal," Hugh prayed silently, smiling a little. "It was right that you remind me of my promise. I held back from the hunt. Forgive me, great Baal. I will give you your chance now." Zadal's relief was short-lived, for when Hui looked directly at him, he saw the smile was on the priest's lips only. His eyes were bright and black and cold. "Zadal," Hui said softly, and the crowd pressed closer to hear his words. "Zadal, will you fly with me on the wings of the storm?" They stirred at the challenge. A quick buzz of comment and they watched Zadal's face. It had paled to a dirty yellow, and his lips compressed into a thin white line.
"I forbid it," said Lannan loudly. "I will not let you do this, Hui. You are too valuable to me to waste your life in—"
Hui interrupted him quietly. "Majesty, it is a matter of honor. This one called me coward."
"But no man has hunted in that manner for 50 years, Lannan protested.
50 years is too long, Hui smiled. "Is it not, Zadal? You and I will revive the custom." Zadal stared at him, hating his own unruly tongue. Hui still smiled at him. "Or is it that the game is too fierce for you?" he asked softly. For long moments it seemed that Zadal might refuse. Then he nodded curtly, his lips still white.
"As you wish, Holiness."
And he knew they were right. He was a dead man.